The same stream of life that runs through my veins night and day runs through the world and dances in rhythmic measures. It is the same life that shoots in joy through the dust of the earth in numberless blades of grass and breaks into tumultuous waves of leaves and flowers. It is the same life that is rocked in the ocean cradle of birth and of death, in ebb and in flow. I feel my limbs are made glorious by the touch of this world of life, and my pride is from the life throb of ages dancing in my blood this moment.
This reading is from Annie Dillard's book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, and in it she is describing a vision that she had and reflections on past, present, and future, heaven and earth. One day I was walking along Tinker Creek, thinking of nothing at all, and I saw a tree with lights in it. I saw the backyard cedar, where the morning doves roost, charged and transfigured, each cell buzzing with flame. I stood on the grass with the lights in it, grass that was holy fire, utterly focused and utterly dreamed. It was less like seeing than like being seen for the first time, knocked breathless by a powerful glance. The flood of fire abated, but I am still spending the power. Gradually, the lights went out in the cedar. The colors died. The cells unflamed and disappeared. I was still ringing. I had been my whole life a bell and never knew it until that moment when I was lifted and struck. I have since only very rarely seen the tree with lights in it. The vision comes and goes, mostly goes, but I live for it, and for the moment when the mountains will open and the new light roars in spate through the crack and the mountains slam. A few days later, she relates, after driving for many hours on an asphalt road and seeing nothing else, she came to a gas station where she was given a cup of coffee and met a small puppy. She's taken the cup of coffee outside and is sitting drinking it. I am utterly alone. The road is vacant. The interstate is out of sight and earshot. Before me extends a low hill, trembling in yellow broom. And behind the hill, filling the sky, rises an enormous mountain ridge, forested, alive, and awesome, and brilliant with brown light. I have never seen anything so tremulous and alive. Overhead, great strips and chunks of cloud dash to the northwest in a gold rush. At my back, the sun is setting. How can I have not noticed before that the sun is setting? My mind has been on a blank slab of black asphalt for hours, but that doesn't stop the sun's wild wheel. I set my coffee beside me on the curb. I smell loam on the wind. I pat the puppy. I watch the mountain. My hand works automatically over the puppy's fur, following the line of hair under his ears, down his neck, inside his forelegs, along his hot-skinned belly. The whole mountain booms, miles closer. The light warms and reddens. The bare forest folds and pleats itself like a living protoplasm before my eyes. The air cools. The puppy's skin is hot. I am more alive than all of the world. This is it, I think. This is it, right now, this present, this empty gas station, here. This western wind, this tang of coffee on the tongue, and I am patting a puppy, I am watching the mountains. And the second I verbalize this awareness in my brain, I cease to see the mountain or feel the puppy. I am opaque, so much black asphalt, but at the same second, the second that I know I have lost it, I also realize that the puppy is still squirming on his back under my hand. Nothing has changed for him. He draws his leg down to stretch the skin taut so that he feels every fingertip stroke along his furred and arching side, his flank, his flung back throat. I sip my coffee. I look at the mountain, which is still doing its tricks. Thanks. Thanks for the memory. It is ironic that the one thing that all religions recognize as separating us from our Creator, our very self-consciousness, is also the one thing that divides us from our fellow creatures. It was a bitter birthday present that evolution gave us, cutting us off at both ends. I get in the car and drive home. I am sitting under a sycamore tree by Tinker Creek. It is early spring, the day after I patted the puppy. I have come to the creek, the backyard stretch of the creek, in the middle of the day to feel the delicate gathering of heat, real sun's heat in the air, and to watch the new water come down the creek. Don't expect more than this, and a mental ramble. I am in the market for some present tense. I am on the lookout, shopping around, more so every year. It's a seller's market. Do you think I wouldn't sell all that I have to buy it? Thomas Merton wrote in a light passage in one of his Gethsemane journals, suggested emendation of the Lord's Prayer, take out thy kingdom come, and substitute, give us time. The time is the one thing that we have been given, and we have been given to time. Time gives us a whirl. We keep waking up from a dream we can't recall, looking around in surprise and lapsing back for years on end. All I want to do is stay awake, keep my head up, prop my eyes open with toothpicks for trees. The sky is deep and distant, laced with sycamore limbs, like a hatching of crossed swords. I can scarcely see it. I'm not looking. I don't come to the creek for sky unmediated, but for shelter. My bank rests on a steep bank under the sycamore. Before me shines the creek. The creek, which is about all the light I can stand. And beyond it rises the other bank, also steep, planted in trees. I have never understood why so many mystics of all creeds experience the presence of God on mountaintops. Aren't they afraid of being blown away? God said to Moses on Sinai, even the priests who have access to the Lord must hallow themselves for fear that the Lord may break out against them. This is the fear. It often feels best to lie low, inconspicuous, instead of waving your spirit around from high places like a lightning rod. In the open, anything might happen. The heave of my shoulders returns me to the present, to the tree, to the sycamore, and I yank myself away and shove off, moving, seeking live water. Live water heals memories. I look up the creek, and here it comes, the future, being borne aloft as on a winding succession of laden trays. You may wake and look from a window and breathe the real air and say with satisfaction or with longing, this is it. But if you look up the creek, if you look up the creek in any weather, your spirit fills, and you are saying with an exulting rise in the lungs, here it comes. It spills toward me, streaming over a series of sandstone tiers, down and down and down. I feel as though I stand at the foot of an infinitely high staircase, down which some exuberant spirit is flinging tennis ball after tennis ball eternally. And the one thing I want in the whole world is a tennis ball. The future is a spirit, or a distillation of the spirit, heading my way. The future is the light on the water. It comes, mediated only on the skin of the real and present creek. My eye can stand no brighter light than this, nor could they see without it. It is a sheer coincidence that upstream from me on this creek's bed, it is ridged with horizontal croppings of sandstone. I never merited this grace. And when I face upstream, I see the light on the water, careering towards me, inevitably, freeing down a grated series of terraces like a balanced wing platforms on an infinite and exhaustible font. Ho, if you are thirsty, come down to the water. Ho, if you are hungry, come and eat. This is the present at last. I can pat the puppy any time I want. This is the now, the flickering broken light, this air that the wind of the future presses down my throat, pumping me buoyant and giddy with praise. My God, look at the creek. It is the answer to Merton's prayer, give us time. It never stops. You don't run down the present, pursue it with baited hooks and nets. You wait for it, empty-handed, and you are filled. You have fish left over. The creek is the one great giver. It is, by definition, Christmas, the incarnation. This old-wrought planet gets the present for its birthday every day. Here is the word from a subatomic physicist. Everything that has already happened is particles. Everything that the future is, waves. Let me twist his meaning. Here it comes. The particles are broken. The waves are translucent. The present is the wave that explodes over my head, flinging the air with particles at the height of its breathless unroll. It is the live water and the light that bears from undisclosed sources the freshest news, renewed and renewing, world without end.
So this is a poem called Consolation. The angle I face, if I turn a degree, my father is not dead. He sails a boat again. Or a slight shift in thinking, and the famous person knows me, will marry me, I am certain. From the corner of my eye, washing dishes, my dead friend reassures and smiles. I stop and grip the sink's edge. When I turn to face her, the angle is wrong, her absence true. Light, but not light through a window, or when the sun whitens a river's mist, a thin interior line. I tilt my head an infinitely small degree and see the door Christ walked through unreal, himself real.
The last few readings have involved the question, I will not even attempt to explain, what is real? When we were out, my brother gave my daughter a bumper sticker, which she couldn't find for me tonight, that said, which way to the real world? We're constantly discussing that here. But I think the last few readings have made it clear that the answer is not easy. And it's a question that a number of British poets tackled, head-on and otherwise. Francis Thompson, a very unusual man, who ended up for part of his life what we would call a street person, put it in this way. O world invisible, we view thee. O world intangible, we touch thee. O world unknowable, we know thee. Incomprehensible, we clutch thee. Does the fish soar to find the ocean, the eagle plunge to find the air, that we should ask of the stars in motion if they have rumor of thee there? Not where the wheeling systems darken and our benumbed conceiving soars. The drift of pinions, would we hearken, beats at our own clay-shuttered doors. The angels keep their ancient places, turn but a stone and start a wing. 'Tis ye, 'Tis your estranged faces that miss the many splendored thing. But when so sad, thou canst not sadder cry, and upon thy so sore loss shall shine the traffic of Jacob's ladder pitched betwixt heaven and Charing Cross. Yea, in the night, my soul, my daughter, cry, clinging heaven by the hems, and lo, Christ walketh on the water, not of Gennesareth, but Thames. William Blake, a century earlier, had similar ideas. He said in the beginning of one of his most famous poems, "To see the world in a grain of sand, and a heaven in a wildflower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in the hour." And in another of his famous ones that is now going to be sung for us, Jerusalem, he explores our unique light. Environmental destruction that we ourselves have been responsible for. And Mark's written a few songs about our environmental destruction.
Hard to follow you guys. Well, to hop on a different note.
And now for something completely different.
I'm going to sing two songs. One a lot of you have heard, and the other one I just found crumpled up on the bottom of my guitar case that I'm going to try and play tonight too. The first one's called the Garbage Song, not Garbology, that would be too complicated. The Garbage Song. It won't last anymore, so you just throw it away.
that's okay, cause you know what I say, I can always just go away. Buy myself a meal in a neat plastic tray. When I'm done, I can just throw it away. And the Tuesday morning garbage man will come and take it away. Now I won't worry about all the stuff that I threw away today. But the day's gonna come when you can't ignore all the trash that goes out your door. When the man in the truck won't come.
Same two chords. And in the same spirit of uncreative titles, the Greenhouse Song.
Of our satanic mills.
Kind of fits this area too, this region. Bixby's Landing. They burned lime on the hill and dropped it down here in an iron car. On a long cable, Here the ships warped in and took their loads from the engine. The water is deep to the cliff. The car hangs halfway over in the gape of the gorge, stationed like a north star above the peaks of the redwoods, iron perch for the little red hawks when they cease from hovering. When they've struck prey, the spider's fling of a cable rust glued to the pulleys. The laborers are gone, but what a good multitude is here in return. The rich lichened rock, the rose-tipped stone crop, the constant ocean's voices, the cloud-lighted space. The kilns are cold on the hill, but here in the rust of the broken boiler, quick lizards lighten and a rattlesnake flows down the cracked masonry, over the crumbled fire brick, in the rotting timbers and roofless platforms. All the free companies of windy grasses have root and make seed. Wild buckwheat blooms in the fat, weather-slacked line from the burst of barrels. Two duckhawks darting in the sky of their cliff-hung nest are the voice of the headland. Wine-hearted solitude, our mother the wilderness, men's failures are often as beautiful as men's triumphs, but your returnings are even more precious than your first presence.
From Desert Solitude. The finest quality of this stone, these plants and animals, this desert landscape, is the indifference manifest to our presence, our absence, our coming, our staying, or our going. Whether we live or die is a matter of absolutely no concern whatsoever to the desert. But men in their madness blast every city on earth into black rubble and envelop the entire planet in a cloud of lethal gas. The canyons and hills, the springs and rocks, will still be here. The sunlight will filter through. Water will form and warmth shall be upon the land. And after sufficient time, no matter how long, somewhere, living things will emerge and join and stand once again. This time, perhaps, to take a different and better course. I have seen the place called Trinity in New Mexico, where our wise men exploded the first atomic bomb, and the heat of the blast fused sand into greenish glass. Already the grass has returned, and the cactus, and the mesquite. On this bedrock of animal faith I take my stand, close by the old road that leads eventually out of the Valley of Paradox. Yes, feet on earth, knock on wood, touch stone. Good luck to all.
And inevitably, I guess, God's grandeur. The world is charged with the grandeur of God. It will flame out like shining from shook foil. It gathers to a greatness like the ooze of oil crushed. Why do men then now not wreck his rod? Generations have trod, and all is seared with trade, bleared, smeared with toil, and wears man's smudge and shares man's smell. The soil is bare now, nor foot can feel, being shod. And for all of this, nature is never spent. There lives the dearest freshness deep down things. And though the last lights off the black west went, oh, morning at the brown brink eastward springs, because the Holy Ghost over the bent world broods with warm breasts and bright wing.
An excerpt from Son of Man by Dennis Potter, an English dramatist. Good timber this, hewed from the grain from the heart of the tree. I could fill a room with tables and chairs with wood like this. Chow! Split it wood, straight as ever you could want. Yes, there's nothing like a bit of wood in your hands. Chow! Not a knot in it. See? Good stuff. A tree. A tree. God puts it in the soil, a tiny little seed. He sends the sun to warm it. He sends the rain to feed it. She lets the earth hug the little plant like a mother with a baby. So it grows. Years and years it grows. Little roots like veins twisting underneath our feet. First it's a sapling tossed by the wind, a feeble thing. But still, sun, rain, still it grows and grows. Oh, a huge thing, a great strong tower climbing toward heaven. Older now than a man. What has it not seen? Chow! Down it comes. Crash! Oh, great tree brought low by the axe. But God doesn't mind. No. What are trees for? Wood. God wants us to build, to have tables to eat off, chairs to sit on. He has filled the earth with good things. All for man, for me, for you. So he doesn't mind, does he? All that sun, all that rain, all those years, all that struggle from seed to giant. Well, tables and chairs are fine things too.
Once there was a tree, and she loved a little boy, and the tree was happy.
Thank you.
All that sun, all that rain, all those years, all that struggle from seed to giant. Well, tables and chairs are fine things too. But look what we do. Look, a cross to kill a man. All that sun, all that rain, and here is the end of it. Something to hold up and stretch out a man while he dies. Man, man, silly, stupid, murdering man. We take the good things God gave us in order to hurt each other. Why? Look at us. Look around you and think. Look into the distance at that haze of towers and domes and houses and think. There are fat men down there, rich enough and vain enough to eat off gold plates. And stinking beggars crawling about in the dust for a tiny scrap of rubbish to keep them alive for one more miserable day. Is that right? Can that be right? There are men down there with swords ready to use for the sake of what they call their glory. Is that right? Can that be right? Look at all the pointless suffering, the greed, extortion, exploitation, the killing, the pomp and swagger and hunger. Priests who talk about the love of God and hold out a collecting box at the same time. Soldiers trained to put a lance into the belly of another mother's son. Can all this be right? Why, a fool can see that it isn't. A fool, yes. And perhaps only a fool, an idiot, can see what is so wrong with the world. Why else do people put up with it? If they knew the truth, they would gather on the street corners in order to be sick. Now that would be a meaningful sacrament. But people don't know the truth. That's obvious. That's flaming obvious. They carry on with their jobs and their burdens and their burnt out hopes. They don't stop in the middle of the street and shout, "Why?" And if they did, they'd be put away.
Now Randy will read another original work that he's done here at Holton Village, Interpenetration.
I give a little intro to this. This winter had a men's spirituality and sexuality retreat here, and at one point we were asked to draw a picture of what we felt our spirituality looked like on a big sheet of paper, which was no small task. And anyway, out of that evolved this when a friend encouraged me to put words to it. Interpenetration. Great Spirit, I see your face emerge from mist and shrouded heights, where the rivers burst forth, splitting sands and banking boulders left and right, trenching down deep, and waters seep and nurture ground where grand and noble towering trees send roots creeping, sounding down through unseen soil and stone, crying patiently apart. The man and woman in deepest embrace, the hungry child, the tormented faces, in every tearing separation, every loss, you, Mother, Father, God, are there. And you rip the night skies open with shafting light, and the great tree gives itself up to receiving the fiery bolt of heaven's fury, and gently falls the stuff of seedlings to the waiting nurse log below, where decaying opening, entering, and nurturing tell your total truth in microcosm. You are the Christ slain, torn, opened by the sword, and the curtain rent in two, the ground quaking, earth shaking, split apart. Death swallowed whole, and silence. Waiting now for the new growth to begin from within the deepest recesses of God's desiring. All dies, all is born anew.
In the beginning, there was a wilderness, and it was with tree and brook. And the man with red skin lived in peaceful coexistence with it. And the white man saw this wilderness, and he feared and hated it, for he did not know it. The evening came and left, and morning came, and a first day had passed. On the second day, the white man heard the wind in the trees and saw their sturdy trunks. And the white man said, "Let us use these trees for our shelter and for our heat." And the wilderness was filled with crying as great trees groaned to the forest floor. And the red man was saddened by what he saw. And when evening came, its smooth darkness was torn by the hungry flames of the great fire that the white man had made to drive the dark away from him. Morning shone on the ashes that once were the trees which shaded the forest, and a second day had passed. On the third day, the white man saw the birds in the sky and the animals that ran in the fields, and he said, "Let us capture these animals and kill them for our food and for our pleasure." And the wilderness was drenched in the blood of the animals, and great herds of deer and bison were killed. And the red man was saddened by what he saw. And evening came, and the night stank of death and decay, and morning shone on the bones of all the animals that were needlessly killed. And a third day had passed. On the fourth day, the white man saw the horizon to the west, and he said, "There is more in the west. Let us go there to live, for there is nothing here." So the white man burned his home and rode to the west. And evening came, and the man looked again to where the sun set, and said, "Surely there is gold in the west, for that is where the sun goes to sleep." And morning dawned on the red man as he saw the white man killing his children, burning his home, and taking the land. And a fourth day had passed. On the fifth day, the white man saw the red man and said, "Let us kill these savages, for they are stupid beasts and they don't believe in our God." And the white man did. And the evening came quickly as in shame to cover sacred ground that had been rent by the tracks of the white man's wagons. Evening also came into the lonely place where the red man was, and it covered up his tears with its darkness. And morning shone on a broken waste. And a fifth day had passed. On the sixth day, the white man looked at what he had done, and he said, "We have stretched from sea to sea on this lonely continent, and have given equal rights to all." And the man was genuinely proud of what he had done, for the white man had never walked silently on a moonlit trail in the wilderness and not been afraid. And there was evening and there was morning, and the sixth day had passed. On the seventh day, the white man saw the error of his ways, but it was too late. And the red man was swallowed up by the white man's world, and the days were no longer separate.
The president in Washington sends word that he wishes to buy our land. How can you buy or sell the sky? the land. The idea is strange to us. If we do not own the freshness of the air and the sparkle of the water, how can you buy them? Every part of this earth is sacred to my people. Every shining pine needle, every sandy shore, every mist in the dark woods, every meadow, every humming insect, all are holy in the memory and experience of my people. We know the sap which courses through the trees as we know the blood that courses through our veins. We are part of the earth and it is part of us. The perfumed flowers are our sisters. The bear, the deer, the great eagle, these are our brothers. The rocky crests, the juices in the meadow, the body heat of the pony, and people all belong to the same family. The shining water that moves in the streams and rivers is not just water, but the blood of our ancestors. If we sell our land, you must remember that it is sacred. Each ghostly reflection in the clear waters of the lakes tells of events and memories in the life of my people. The waters murmur as the voice of my father's father. The rivers are our brothers. They quench our thirst. They carry our canoes and feed our children. So you must give to the rivers the kindness you would give to any brother. If we sell you our land, remember that the air is precious to us, that the air shares its spirit with all the life it supports. The wind that gave our grandmother her first breath also receives her last sigh. The wind also gives our children the spirit of life. So if we sell you our land, you must keep it apart and sacred, as a place where people can go to taste the wind that is sweetened by meadow flowers. Will you teach your children what we have taught our children, that the earth is our mother? What befalls the earth befalls all the people of the earth. This we know, the earth does not belong to people, people belong to the earth. All things are connected like the blood that unites us all. People did not weave the web of life. They are merely a strand in it. Whatever you do to the web, you do to yourself. One thing we know, our God is also your God. The earth is precious to God, and to harm the earth is to heap contempt on her creator. Your destiny is a mystery to us. What will happen when the buffalo are all slaughtered, the wild horses tamed? What will happen when the secret corners of the forest are heavy with the scent of many men, and the view of the ripe hills is blotted by talking wires? Where will the thicket be? Gone. Where will the eagle be? Gone. And what is it to say goodbye to the swift pony and the hunt? The end of living and the beginning of survival. When the last of my people has vanished with their wilderness and their memory is only the shadow of a cloud moving across the prairie, will these shores and forests still be here? Will there be any spirit of my people left? We love this earth as a newborn loves its mother's heartbeat. So if we sell you our land, love it as we have loved it. Care for it as we have cared for it. Hold it in your mind the memory of the land as it is when you receive it. Preserve the land for all children and love it, as God loves us all. As we are part of this land, you too are part of the land. This earth is precious to us. It 'tis also precious to you. One thing we know, there is only one God. No person, be he red or white, can be apart. We are brothers and sisters, after all.
Passenger Pigeon poem and then close with the song. But you have to get away, Jeannie. And Randy's going to do a poem, Passenger Pigeon by Robinson Jeffers.
Slowly the passenger pigeons increased. Then suddenly their numbers became enormous. They would flatten 10 miles of forest when they flew down to roost. And the cloud of their rising eclipsed the dawns. They became too many. They are all dead. Not one remains. And the American bison, their hordes would hide a prairie from horizon to horizon, great heads and storm cloud shoulders, a torrent of life. How many are left? For a time, for a few years, their bones turned the dark prairies white. You, Death, you watch for these things, these explosions of life. They are your food. They make your feasts. But turn your great rolling eyes away from humanity, those grossly craving black eyes. It is true, we increase. A man from Britain landing in Gaul when Rome had fallen, he journeyed 14 days inland through that beautiful rich land, the orchards and rivers and the looted villas. He reports that he saw no living man. But now we fill up the gaps. In spite of wars, famines, and pestilences, we are quite suddenly 3 billion people. Our bones, ours too, would make wide prairies white, a beautiful snow of unburied bones, bones that have twitched and quivered in the nights of love, bones that have shaken with laughter and hung slack in sorrow, coward bones, worn out with trembling, strong bones broken on the rack, bones broken in battle, broad bones gnarled with hard labor, and the little bones of sweet young children, and the white empty skulls, little carved ivory wine jugs that used to contain passion and thought and love and insane delirium, where now not even worms live. Respect humanity, Death, these shameless black eyes of yours. It is not necessary to take all at once. Besides that, you can't do it. We are too powerful. We are men, not pigeons. You may take the old, the useless and helpless, the cancer-bitten and the tender young, but the human race has still history to make. For look, look now at our achievements. We have bridled the cloud leaper lightning, a lion whipped by a man, to carry our messages and work our will. We have snatched the live thunderbolt out of God's hands. Ha! That was little, and last year. For now we have taken the primal powers, creation and annihilation. We make new elements such as God never saw. We can explode atoms and annul the fragments, nothing left but pure energy. We shall use it in peace and war. Very clever, he answered in his thin, piping voice, cruel and a eunuch. Roll those idiot black eyes of yours and the field beast, not unintelligent man. We are not in your order. You watch the dinosaurs grow.